Welcome to Bootstrap. This is episode... What is it, guys?
Episode 22.
I literally forgot. Okay, 22.
Yeah, I
right?
also did. 22.
We always forget. Anyway, this was a special episode because after so many weeks of Hostfuls, and people were like, we love you guys, but it's enough already. We got a guest.
Yes, and we got a very good guest.
We got an excellent guest. We got Amir Shvat, who is now a big shot at Twitter. A nice big shot. He's a very nice guy. He has worked at Google. He has worked at Amazon. He has worked at...
Microsoft.
Slack. And Microsoft, right. And like you'll see later in the episode, he worked at so many places, like we had to try to guess like where next. So we put up a Twitter poll for the listeners, Apple or Facebook, what do you think? But he is such a great guy. He's very well known here in the industry. He moved to California, I forgot how long ago, but it's been a while. And now he lives in Texas, but he still comes back often. He's like, Amir is like a piece of the Israeli tech ecosystem, and we love him for it. Right, guy?
Yes, we do. Yes.
And thanks to him, you'll hear why in the episode, I was a glass hole. Thank you very much.
Yes.
A very useful piece of technology. Anyway, we had some good talks this time. Hill also came up with like a very, he wants us to start going very dark. He wants us to do some like very dark segments, which is okay, interesting.
We'll see how that goes.
It's like we're only in the 20 something episodes, no, 22. We're not yet grasping for like what else should we do. I think we got a lot of good content. Anyway. Anything else, guy?
Get it? Let's go. It's a long episode.
All right. Enjoy, Amir Shvat. Thank you, Amir. You gave us a long time. It was a great interview. This is a great episode. I'm feeling good about it. Feeling great about it. Get it.
One of our best.
Bootstrap Bump.
Sure.
You know what to do. Hello. Come on. We're on.
We're live.
What are we doing? Is this before or after? What's happening right now?
This is the Bootstrap Podcast.
Yeah, this is the Bootstrap Podcast, and later we have a guest. Later,
I think this is going to be one of our best episodes to date. How's that for prophecy, wow. Baby?
Big words.
This is not a Hostful. This is not a Hostful, guys. Alert! Do we have a good? We have a drum roll. All right, we have a drum roll instead of alert. This week, we had a guest, and who was that guest, Hillel?
You know what? Honestly, why are you laughing? Honestly, forget for 1 second that the dude has the craziest tech CV ever. He's literally,
ever.
And I think everyone here can agree, he's literally one of the nicest people in tech.
Yeah.
Amir Shvat.
And who is he? Amir Shvat.
Amir Shvat, ex-Microsoft, ex-Google, ex-Slack, ex-Twitch, Amazon, now working at Twitter. Mind blown.
And I know that the interview is coming up, but I think it will be really funny when you mention to him that he should also work at Apple. I thought that was a good line.
Thank you.
But I think that's what's going to happen. I don't know if that's what's going to happen.
That's an idea for a joke.
Where has he not worked?
Facebook.
That's right. He hasn't worked at Facebook. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Oh, yeah. All right. No, he has to get on it. All right. Anyway. So we're exhausted for no reason because coming up is Amir Shvat. But what a week
fogies.
This has been. Sorry to everyone. We're recording on a Tuesday. Usually we record on a Sunday, but Hillel and I were fasting. Sorry, guy, putting on blast. No guilt.
Why do you assume I wasn't fasting?
Well, you're vegan, so you're pretty much fasting also. But
I'm just saying it's hot in hell, guy. I'm just saying it's hot in hell.
Whoa.
At least I won't be hungry.
Anyway, we were all incapacitated. We were all incapacitated.
No, I was fine. I was fine.
Well, you couldn't do it without us, so whatever. I just want to point out, though, that if we were to have recorded on Tisha B'Av, it probably would have been hilarious. You get like delirious at the end of it. It would have been extremely low energy.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't have been good.
Right, next time.
Next time. Yom Kippur. We'll record.
I'm game.
All right. So anyway, so we're recording on Tuesday, but we're going to get this one out as soon as possible because again, it's going to happen in the future. I think it's going to be a great interview with Amir. All right. Any feedback? What's going on in everyone's life? Hello. Stop looking at your phone. What's up? What's going on in your life?
I don't know. What's exciting? Let me look at my calendar. I don't know. Interesting things that I have going on.
The recurring segment on the show, the Hillel calendar corner.
Hillel's calendar stuff.
Tomorrow. Oh, I'm doing a panel tomorrow with Eyal Waldman. I'm interviewing him for a fund that I'm working with, Shempel Capital. I don't know if you guys know Eyal Waldman, but Google him. He's like probably the most impressive Israeli entrepreneur ever. And so we're doing that. That's tomorrow. It's going to be exciting. What else is exciting? I met a coach for the first time this morning. Some guy pitched me. He wants to talk to me. And I'm like, all right, let me hear. But I said to him, I'm super skeptical about that. I don't know that I believe in this stuff, but whatever. That was interesting. I just have a lot of meetings. Nothing mind-blowing. Just some cool
you
stuff.
You met Omri Cuspi today.
That was yesterday.
Why you... That was yesterday? You posted it today, though, didn't you?
No, posted it yesterday. Get with the program.
Okay,
so he announced his retirement for basketball, and I wrote a post about him because he's, by the way, an awesome, awesome guy, and literally hit publish on the post, walked to my first meeting, and he was sitting there. I was like, did you see my post? He's like, no. I'm sure he's getting, like, you know, everyone's talking about his retirement. But, no, he's a really good guy, and I can't say who he's sitting with because they asked me not to, but who he was sitting with is very, very indicative of what he's going to do next. Enough said.
Ooh.
Was it also someone from SoftBank? Is he also going to become a partner at SoftBank? As long as they're getting random famous Israelis to run their office, he could become an investor at SoftBank.
We got the spy. We got the tall guy. Now what?
Rounds out.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a mensch. I met him once in a hotel lobby here. He's a very nice guy. But I know he has a podcast now, and I don't listen to it because it's in Hebrew. Is it good, guy? Have you heard it?
I have no idea. I never met him either. I feel really left out here.
Well, he's a competitor now, so we must destroy him.
Okay, so it's a race.
We will destroy Omri Cuspi. All right, you guys want to hear something from my life? Thank you for asking. So check this out.
How about you, Itamar? Your life?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Want to get your take on this. I won't mention any names. Last week, a VC that we pitched, I will not name any names, but I'll happily tell you guys offline. In the Deeplink days, so it must have been like, I don't know, 5, maybe even 6 years ago. He worked at some firm. He's not even there anymore. But we were connected on LinkedIn. He was not very nice. He wasn't horrible, but he wasn't, you know, not very nice. Yeah. I'll put it that way. He reaches out to me on LinkedIn. All of a sudden, he sees, you know, oh, Omar has a big company on his resume. Ooh, whoa. That must mean something. So he asked me for a favor. And he wanted me to talk to one of his portfolio companies. And I think they were trying to sell into my company, or it actually, you know, turned into more of like a what should we even do with our product kind of thing. But there was a moment where I was thinking like, oh, I'd just love to tell this guy to go shove it somewhere. But then yes, I realized that his portfolio company, they did not do anything to me, and I should be more generous in my time. Did I do the right thing, or should I have told him to go shove it?
So does that make you an asshole just thinking of being an asshole, or are you a nice guy because you actually did it?
You tell me.
I don't know. There was a little bit of assholiness inside there, but yeah, you didn't let
he
it shine
through. He
was
mean to us. I didn't.
And yet you were holding on to it for 5 years.
Oh, grudges I can hold. I have no hair, okay, guy. Clearly, it comes from somewhere. But I'm assuming Hillel goes, you know, comes across this all the time because he has asked favors a hell of a lot more than probably both of us. And I'm sure a lot of them are people you do not love.
No, so I'll tell you something. Out of the, I don't know, what would you guys estimate how many entrepreneurs I've met in the last 15 years? What would you guess? Give me a rough number. What
15 years?
Last, whatever, 10 years, 12 years, whatever. What would you say?
2,000.
Sounds about right. Okay, 2,000.
Yeah, wow.
Out of the 2,000 entrepreneurs that I've met, I think between 3 and 5 have like blatantly taken advantage of my niceness. like blatantly, and I'm obviously not going to name names, but there's like one company that the CEO is this like young, like egotistical, I'm the coolest guy ever kind of guy. And he writes me every half a year to ask me for help. I then meet him. I don't know anymore, but I used to meet him, and he would spend the entire meeting selling about how amazing he is. And at the end of the meeting, I'd say to him, dude, like, you asked me for help and you literally just spent the entire meeting telling me how amazing you are. What do you want? And this happened. He would just every half a year. And I was like, I literally just ignore his emails now. And I don't ignore people's emails, but like people like that just want to waste your time. Like that I don't have patience for, but literally out of the 2000, let's say entrepreneurs that I've met, 99.9% of them, you know, really, let's say needed help. And were very, very grateful afterwards. In some cases it was gave me equity. In some cases, you know, worked with me officially. And in some cases just, you know, thanked me, which is fine. I don't expect anything back, but like, very few of them really acted like a-holes.
I've heard the stories that you can't say here, and they're crazy. They would have driven me nuts.
Yeah. No, I you know what? Like, honestly, there's some people I can't relate. I don't understand, like, why would a person do that? I feel like we should do? I'm being serious. We should, at one point, maybe not in the next episode, but one of our episodes, we should dedicate at least a half an episode to scam artists in tech.
Can you tell the story? Are you able to tell the story about that guy who worked at Apple? Or are you not able to tell? Do we have time? No, not now for when we do that segment.
Oh, 100%.
Oh my God, that's a crazy story.
Like, you Google his
that's
name.
That's a crazy story.
That is insane, but that's not the most insane story. I worked at a startup. I promise you, I pitched the mayor of Austin, Texas to use his platform for South by Southwest, and he bought it. And it turned out there was no product, there was no technology, there was no money. The whole thing was a scam. I could tell you stories you wouldn't even believe.
Okay, we'll do that only if we have a chaser of like a really positive segment.
No, let's stay with a scam segment. Let's do a show.
We'll
about
do a scam segment, and then we'll do another one of unscams.
You know, I blame us. By the way, it's our fault that this thing happens. I'm being serious right now. Like we who's glorify. Our? Like
whoa, me?
Shut up. Listen. Stop talking. Listen. We glorify monster rounds. We glorify IPOs. We glorify startups. And, you know, everyone shows the hockey stick. No one shows what it's really like to build a startup. And so, of course, people are lying and saying that they're CEOs of startups because we make it into some kind of like, you're a hero if you're a startup CEO. So it's our fault that people make up crap.
I agree with that a little bit, except that it's your fault. And just remember, people, again, that this is true. Even though everyone's like IPOing now, sell your company for $100 million and feel good about it. Don't ever let anyone make you think that that's not a very large number.
So you're encouraging people to scam just to get to $100 million?
No.
That's what I heard.
I'm encouraging people to be okay with a good outcome that doesn't look like everyone else's outcome. Anyway, I don't know why I brought up the topic. Maybe I just wanted validation because of a dark hole inside, and I wanted you guys to tell me I'm a good person.
So anyway, yeah, I think you're a good person, Itamar.
Thank you. I met the company.
I want you to hear that.
Thank you. And they actually are doing something really cool, and I'm going to help them out. So it goes to show you, if VCs are mean to you, you know, I don't know what it goes to show you, but no, don't hold on to it. Let it go. And, you know, I'm sure it'll pay off. Watch him lead my next round at the next company I start, and we're going to become best friends.
Just make sure that when it's his birthday, you buy him Q-tips. I know, it's not the same guy.
Yeah, he wasn't. By the way, I cannot tell you how many people wrote to me, and they're like, thank you for talking about the earwax thing. Because so many, like, people have been in meetings where, like, clearly people are being so, like, blatantly rude about them not paying attention. I'm like, all right. You know, thank you. I'm happy to have done it.
There is actually a tech angle here. There is. Have you ever cleaned your AirPods?
Oh, good
yes,
Lord.
Yes, I did.
How? How do you clean them? Like, my AirPods are disgusting.
They sell this Play-Doh stuff.
I bought that.
I found like a... Oh, yeah? I found a guide online. It was disgusting to do, but yeah, I did it.
Yeah, my AirPods are gross.
All right, this is a call out to the Bootstrap Nation. Hilo needs a good AirPod cleaning.
Hack.
If anyone provides those services... Please go to his house and clean it.
Fantastic. Do you want to give them my address too while you're at it?
How many times have I written to you, Hillel, to tell you to black out your license and your address because you posted online?
My address?
Yeah, in front of your house when you're like playing basketball. Your address box
thingy.
Nobody
knows what street it is. Do me a favor. That's ridiculous.
You changed it, so you clearly thought it was a good idea.
Remember, last episode? Remember last episode when I said I really want to meet when you're an old man because you're neurotic? Remember that? Just saying.
Okay, hold on. You're accusing me of neuroses when you said good call, man, and you re-uploaded the picture and blocked it out.
Dude, listen to me.
You have...
Okay, I want to talk about this. People say to me all the time, I take pictures, why don't you block out the license plate? The guy's driving on the road. Everyone sees his license plate. What the hell? Why is that secret?
Fine, license plate aside, but your address was whatever.
Okay, I don't know if it said the name of the street, but yeah, okay, that I'll take. But like, license plates, I don't get that at all.
I don't know. You're out there. You have stalkers. I don't want anyone to hurt you.
That's a topic we should talk about next time, or one time also, by the way. Haters
in the scam episode. It's going to go very dark. Yeah, anyway.
It's going downhill from here.
Yeah. All right, should we get to news?
Let's do the news. Let's do the news. Tesla, they launched a subscription that's $200 a month for its full self-driving package, FSD for full self-driving. Now, it isn't really full self-driving, which is kind of odd, but I guess that's where they're going. It used to cost $10,000 like as an add-on. When you buy the car, you can add $10,000 and then you get full self-driving, which isn't full self-driving. And now instead, it's a subscription for $200 a month, and you can turn it off whenever you want, which it's kind of weird, no? Because it means your car has all the hardware for self-driving. You basically somehow paid for it. And now it's just a matter of them squeezing it out of you, either on a month-to-month basis or one time.
I bet a lot more people get it because of that. I bet it was a real impediment because of how much if you have to pay for it all up front. I mean, which one of us hasn't been on the Tesla Israel website to start pricing the Tesla of our dreams? Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone's nodding. Exactly. And you add that self-driving car, Pat, you're like, all right, screw this. I need to IPO. I don't know,
have we talked about autonomous driving like as a topic? We discussed this?
Yes.
Like the levels of autonomy? Like we've talked about that?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I think so.
Because when I met with Innoviz, he explained to me this whole world of, people don't know this, but like people talk about Tesla being, self-driving. It's not actually self-driving. Like it's level 2 autonomous driving. And that means you have to stay there close to the steering wheel with your hands on, your eyes on the road, just like my Volvo, right? So what he told me was that real quick, there's 3 ways for a car to be autonomous. I don't know if we talked about this, but first one is cameras, which stink at night or when it's raining, which are just completely ineffective. Then there's radar, which will tell you, if there's a cop ahead of you, but it won't tell you if there's a pothole on the road. And then level 3 is fully autonomous, sit in the back seat. And the first OEM to have a fully autonomous car on the road is going to be BMW, and it's going to be powered by Innoviz using LiDAR. So that's just kind of in terms of the future.
Okay.
So I thought Tesla got rid of LiDAR because they said it was garbage.
So yeah, there's this debate
it was
about
garbage
it.
Because if you look at Google self-driving cars, the LiDAR is like the size of like South America. It's huge, right? But Innoviz, it's like this big. Like you don't even see it. So that's why LiDAR stinks, or it did stink before.
Just because of the size?
I think it's more expensive. No, I think it's more expensive as well. I'm not sure though. Yeah, Tesla actually they upgraded their existing self-driving last week. So that now it can navigate by itself on certain streets, not just on the highway. So they're getting there. It's pretty clear they're trying to get to what they call full self-driving. And for now, it's just a bunch of features like it detects traffic lights and it stops for you and it does all these things, including not on highways. But it's going to take a while, I guess. It is, like you said, it's...
Were you with me when we met? I don't know if it was you, but did we meet Benedict Evans together?
No.
Because
no. When I met him on my own.
No, I don't mean the first time you met him. Like we'd never had a meeting with him, me and you and him.
I don't think so.
Okay, anyway, it was when he was a part at Andreessen.
No, I've never been to Andreessen.
Okay, so I met him at Andreessen, and one of the things we talked about was autonomous cars. This is probably, I'd say, 4 or 5 years ago, and he said, we're not even close. And Benedict Evans, for those that don't know, is probably the smartest person in tech. He's like at least a decade away. Like, and it's important to understand that like even if the technology is ready, You can't have half human drivers, half self, you know, self-driving cars. Like, that's just going to make a... So really, like, the whole road needs to be autonomous for it to be, like, safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the news, this news specifically is more about the fact that they changed it from asking people to pay for all of it up front to a subscription fee per month that they could turn on and off, which is smart. I mean, I think we're all violently agreeing because it sounds like what Tesla is able to offer with their full self-driving are different actions, right? Like automatic lane changing, you know, kind of like cruise control on the highway kind of thing and being able to like change speeds based on that and a bunch of other things, which sounds like... it sounds like they probably did the math and they realized like how many people aren't upgrading to the full package and maybe they'll get more people into it. First of all, the markets love recurring revenue, right? So this is smart from a business point of view as well. And because the markets love recurring revenue, they're also lowering the barrier to entry. So now more people are going to get on it. They're going to now be able to juice their numbers of how many people are opting in for the self-driving package, which by the way helps them with more data and to make the product better. So all around it sounds like a good call.
Are you guys getting a Tesla?
What do you think?
One day.
Are you getting one? Seriously?
Yeah, it's gonna be my next car, that's for sure. Just the question of when.
Right. So when the S comes to Israel, I'm not even waiting a day. I'm selling my Volvo that day and buying.
I just want to point out though, guys, I had this debate with a friend, with a neighbor of mine over Shabbat. It is not a cheap car. I just, you know, it's an awesome car. It might be worth it. But the prices that they show are not including tax. If you even get the base model, it costs more than like the SUV, top of line SUV I used to have. It's not cheap here. I don't know why we propagated this lie here that they had such a good price here.
It's about 200,000 shekels, the cheapest model.
Which is crazy.
It's not cheap.
It's about 120,000, equivalent of 120,000 in the States.
Okay, but
for base model three.
You're making an unfair comparison here. First of all, anybody's listening that's outside of Israel, here's that number. They're like, what the actual hell? Let's put things in context here. Toyota Camry costs $70,000 in this country. So like, let's just put things in perspective. That's number one. And number two, it is relatively, if you look at the ratio, you know, of let's say a Toyota Camry in America versus Toyota Camry here, the ratio is much closer when it comes to Tesla. So it's not cheap, but what I thought it would cost, it's much cheaper. And I'll just say that my Volvo that I drive it's actually embarrassing how much it costs in this country. So like, I sell the Volvo, I'll buy the Tesla. Like, you know, whatever. That's what I'm going to do. It's not a question. Model S, no question about it. And I don't know how I'm going to control myself and not get the new model, the X?
The Y?
No, the Model S, but the fastest one.
It's a Plaid.
Oh, the Plaid?
Plaid, yeah, Plaid. I'm not going to be able to control myself. I'm definitely going to get that.
No.
Anyway, yeah, it's no problem. You just sell my Volvo. Yeah, I don't know what you poor people do.
That was
just tell your butler to sell the Volvo.
On a spectrum from 1 to 100, if 100 is like the perfect impersonation, that didn't even make the chart.
It's very relatable what you're saying to people.
That was the worst impersonation of me ever.
Tony
from Sopranos? What was that?
Exactly like you.
Hillel said that the Model 3 is not expensive because you just have to sell your Volvo SUV. That's it.
Yeah.
It's easy as that.
Shut up, Mr. Juke. All right, let's go. Moving along now.
I love my Juke.
Yes. I'm just going to point out Isamar drives a car that means cockroach. Yes, moving along.
All right, next in the news, Twitter. We're having Amir Shavat on in a little bit, and he's working at Twitter now. So Twitter is shutting down Fleets, which is its Stories product, after it's a few months, I think. No, since November, maybe 6 months since they launched it.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more. Which was kind of surprising, I think, to most people. Because it seemed like every single product out there was now getting this Stories feature. It started obviously with Snapchat and then Instagram and then everybody followed. And Twitter decided to shut theirs down. So that was surprising. The comments that I saw about this online were actually commending them and saying, good job on, you know, trying to do something, seeing that it didn't work as you wanted it to and moving on and just killing it.
You want to know my thoughts on this?
Go.
I never even heard of it. So Yeah, that just shows how popular it was.
Oh, right. You don't use the Twitter native app.
Never even heard of it.
Right.
If you have the native Twitter client on there on your phone, then it's up there. It's like the top thing. Everybody sees it. The name, by the way, is kind of stupid. I think if they would have called it Twitter Stories, it would have been clear what it is. You call it Flitz.
What does the name mean in Hebrew, Guy?
Flitz? I don't know. What is Flitz? Oh, no. I never thought about that. Okay.
You know what? It's unbelievable. He will never grow up. Itamar will never. He just made a fart joke.
I'm not the one who named it.
I just want to point
out that
we're going bathroom humor. Like, first of all, I think you did it last. It took us 20 episodes, so I'm impressed, Itamar. I'm happy that it only took us 20 episodes for bathroom humor, but yeah.
Thank you. It sounds like the audience loves it, okay? That's what I'm hearing. Wait,
so you noticed that? Because I didn't notice it till you just said. You noticed that's what it means?
I did. I tweeted about it. It didn't get much traction because not a lot of Israelis are on Twitter.
By the way,
right, Hila?
I just want to say that I heard you and I chose to ignore you. Okay, don't tell me I didn't hear you. I heard you and I'm ignoring you.
I was teeing it up for you.
Anyway, so what do you think, Itamar, about Flitz?
Yes, good for the. It was a silly. I mean, you know, let's say it was a good try. But, you know, good for them that they did shut it down, honestly. It was. I never used it. I thought it was silly. You know, it didn't provide much content. It is starting to feel like everything has stories. Instagram did stories well. I mean, that was a good, or let's say successful copy. But now with Reels, they're having problems copying TikTok. You can't just copy and paste things. It's psychologically, people come to products for a certain either topic or method of, like, you're reading, but then you're going to see, like, these big graphics that are ephemeral. It didn't fit. So, yeah, okay. Good for them for shutting it down.
Sharp turn. I owe you guys. Okay, wait. Guy, you wanted to say something on the topic?
I want to say, yeah. So, if what you're saying is true, what do you have to say about the audio room? So, Twitter is replacing the Fleets with their Twitter Spaces, which is their Clubhouse audio room ripoff. And that seems to be successful, and they seem to be very, very pushy on anything audio now. They have audio tweets, and they have the Twitter Spaces. So I don't know. I mean, I think every platform has a certain use, and the mechanism could be dynamic. It could be like LinkedIn has stories, and maybe do they have stories? I don't know. But it could be, you know, business-related stories. And WhatsApp, I have no idea what people do with WhatsApp stories, but they also have...
By the way, kids are obsessed with WhatsApp. So I've never, ever, ever looked at my WhatsApp story ever. I don't even understand the product. Yeah. But I owe you guys an apology because when you asked me before what's going on and I said nothing that exciting, I totally forgot about who my next meeting is with. My next two meetings today. First one is with Efrat Noy, who worked at Cisco, and that's where I met her. And she just became a partner at Andreessen. I'm catching up with her. That's very exciting. She's
in Israel?
She's not in Israel, no. She worked with the Cisco team here, and that's where I met her, but she's there. So that's the first one. And the second call I'm having this evening at 8 p.m. is with Dr. Peter Fitzgerald, who is a partner at Tri Ventures with Michal Geva, who invests in like healthcare.
The Dr. Peter Fitzgerald?
Yes. How do you know him?
He's one of the cardiologists, the leading cardiologist in the world, seriously.
I don't think that's him. Maybe it is. I don't know. But anyway.
He is.
He's
He's a professor at Stanford. And he's a partner at Tri Ventures. And I met him when I was in Silicon Valley one time, the nicest guy on the planet. Like, he's an amazing investor, super smart, but like literally such a nice guy. And so we're catching up, just to talk, what's going on in healthcare and what he's interested
in. You're sending him a deal flow?
I'm sending Michal deal flow. That's his partner here. She's great. Michal Geva.
Cool. So, yeah, exciting. Yeah, that was a sharp turn. Apology, granted.
Thank you.
You are forgiven. Anyway, the last thing I was going to say on this note of Twitter shutting down Fleets, which now you can't unhear it, right, guys?
Exactly. Now I can't unhear it.
Damn you can't unhear how...
Good thing they killed it.
Someone Hebrew-speaking did not name that product. Anyway, you could call it Chirps. I mean, I know what they're going for. Like, they have everything bird, whatever. But anywho, someone had a good tweet that I've been showing, like, everyone on my team here. About how, like, being prolific is better than being perfect, right? Like, it just, same thing, like, take more shots on goal. So they took another swing, tried something, didn't work. The Spaces is working. I'm sure the data is showing it's working. I still haven't used it. I don't see Hillel on it. I don't see Guy on it, but okay.
Because it doesn't work with their API.
Oh, okay.
Use
right.
the Twitter client. It's Dude, there. It's free. Happening. Just install
Listen
it.
Listen to me. I have install Twitter. Install it. I have it.
That's it. Use it. Use
certain
it.
Notifications that I can't get with the API.
Use it.
You cannot tell me that the UX on the Twitter app is even remotely close to any of the Twitter apps, let alone Tweetbot, which is awesome. Just a
I have an
experience.
Idea. When we have Amir coming up, why don't you, instead of saying hi to him nicely, why don't you dump him all your anger about what's going on with Twitter?
I'm so
And how you
him.
Feel about it.
I'm going to attack him. Look out, Amir.
All right, cool. All right, anyway, coming up now, I think he's ready. I think he's here. We got Amir Shvat, right. who's Boom. Head of developer relations or developer platform at
head
Twitter.
Head of product for developer platform.
There you go. All right. Here he is, Amir Shvat. Enjoy. Get it.
I don't do get it.
All right. Amir Shvat in the flesh. Not really in the flesh.
Hello.
But in Israel.
Virtually in the
flesh. So it counts.
Definitely.
When Amir comes to Israel, it's like a happening in Tel Aviv. Like everyone goes crazy. They make these big events. Amir Shvat's in town. Pretty awesome.
Thank you. That's not true, but thank you for being kind.
It seems that way on Facebook.
How long are you in town for?
Until we have an event tonight, but I'm here until Sunday.
Nice. Very nice. Well, we see you're eating well for sure.
Oh, did I?
And we're seeing the pictures.
Did I gain weight?
No, we're seeing the pictures. No. Oh, I'm not talking about you. Take the pictures of the food.
Amir, business or pleasure?
It's always both. For me, business is pleasure. So it's family. We haven't been here for like 20 months, but also seeing great startups. We're having an event today with Innovation Endeavors. It's a pleasure to be here every day.
I have one question for you, and we're gonna dive in. But I have one question for you. Who the hell made up the urban legend that Twitter has not caught on in Israel? Like, where did that come from? Because my entire feed is Twitter is Israelis, and like every time I speak to any startup, they're like, Twitter? Nah, it didn't catch on in Israel. Like the entire tech world, the entire sports world, the entire acting world, everybody's on Twitter. Who made that up?
I do not know, but I'm enjoying.
It's not true though, right?
It's not true. People tell me that they enjoy Twitter very much here.
Just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of Hillel's gripes. All right, so I'll start off, Amir. I actually would like to thank you. We go way back. We met a while ago in my startup career. And I don't know if you know what kind of impact you have on people in general. We'll go into your different roles as developer relations. But the simple act of a very nice act that you did made a big impact in my career. And I just wanted to thank you.
My God.
When you were, it's not too big, but it's, medium size. Yeah. I'm very appreciative. And I think it's indicative of your role as someone who has worked in developer relations and how it fits your personality. You're very generous. So I'm starting with something nice. Back in, I think it was 2012, you emailed Yossi Vardi and you told him that you wanted to introduce a bunch of Israeli startups to the Android team that was visiting Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. Which in and of itself, I'm assuming that wasn't even something you were instructed to do. So that was generous in and of itself. Always trying to help, which is, I think, a key trait you have. And then, Yossi forwarded along to us and a bunch of other of his companies. You got us in touch immediately with a bunch of people on the Android team. Long story short, I got to meet Eric Schmidt at Mobile World Congress because of someone that was introduced there. And a bunch of the other BD people got me into Google I.O. that year, and I got Google Glass thanks to you.
Wow.
So thank you for that.
Awesome. And you made a profile picture because of him.
I became a glass hole thanks to you. But in all honesty, I made some great connections there that really had an impact on my startup later on. Do you hear a lot of stories like this? You have a rich, experience in developer relations, just relations in general. Why are you so helpful? Where is this coming from? And thank you again.
So I like to work with people like yourself that are smarter than me and more creative than me and empower them to be their best. That's my mission in life, right? So that's why I chose developer platforms as a passion. I think that the more I enable other people to be successful, the better I feel. And I do that. Now I do it about 2 hours a day trying to help. And I know Hillel is doing a lot of that. And I think he could say the same. Like, it makes you feel good and it pays back dividends in a major way. And if you do it enough, you get a feedback loop that is tremendous. And the older you get, the more moments you have opportunities to do this. But when I was at AWS, I did some executive soul searching with a coach there. And I found out that that is my passion. My passion is to build platforms that let people build innovation that is better than what I would ever be able to do. And for me, helping you do that is just intuitive to me, because you are smart, you are creative, and I want to enable you. That's what makes me happy.
So
it's not being good, it's just like finding your sweet spot and what can you contribute to others.
So I want to just address one thing that you said that really hit home for me, and that is, it's good business, right? People say to me all the time, it's good karma. I'm like, I don't pay for groceries with karma. Forget karma. It's good business. And, you know, just a silly example, right? If a startup wants an introduction to an investor, okay, a startup wants an introduction to Amir Shvat. So I have them send me an email. I forward it to you. It takes me exactly a second and a half. They gain and you gain. What did I lose? I lost nothing. And so people don't understand that. I always say this as a joke, being a friar, right? Helping others with no expectations is actually really, really good business. That's just to add to what you were saying. Now, I want to ask a question. First of all, for those listening that might not know Amir Shvat, I don't know what rock you've been living under, but just to give you a overview of this guy who's sitting with us right now, and tell me if I forgot something. Ex-Microsoft, ex-Google, ex-Slack, ex-Twitch, Amazon, now working for Twitter. You say AWS? You were at AWS?
Twitch was a part of AWS. It still is.
Ah, okay. Okay. So it was Twitch. So did I cover everything? Is that your resume?
And my startup reshuffle, which was acquired by Twitter. But right. Yes.
Weren't you at Converse also?
I was at Converse when half of Israel was in Converse.
When Hillel was there too.
How come we never hung out at Converse? Okay. Oh. So I want to get the elephant out of the room right now. Okay. It's going to be a hard question, but you're not allowed to say pass. You have to give an answer. Okay. I don't give a crap if you're corporate. I don't care about Twitter. You have to answer the question. Here it is. You're a guy who lives and breathes developers. Okay. All of the companies you've worked for very much respect and work for the developer community. Twitter, which you and I know, I love. By the way, Itamar opened my Twitter account for me. Side point. But I love and I live
I'm on sorry, Twitter, humanity.
I love Twitter. You know that. But I would like to know Twitter's rationale for building this platform based on its developer community and then basically shutting out its developer community. So for example, you know, TweetDeck was the beginning. They acquired TweetDeck. Great. But what made Twitter Twitter was not Twitter.com. It was all of the ecosystem. And, you know, I, for example, use Tweetbot. I don't know if you use the regular Twitter app, I imagine you do, but I use Tweetbot and I love it, but I can't see surveys. I can't see group DMs. I can't even get push notifications. Forget everything. Push notifications. That's like 101. So I want to understand as much as you can tell me, because I understand you have to be careful, but how does Twitter justify this? Like, why are they not giving their community the freedom to do what they want with their API?
So what you say burns in a good way, just like going to the gym and your muscles burn. My PM muscles are burning in my head. Hearing and developing empathy, because you're right. There are the one number one feedback that we're getting from all of our developers is feature parity. Why can't the API have feature parity? For example, polls. Why can't you create polls inside the API? And our focus for this year will be that. We want to create an API that has feature parity. Why haven't we done that? There's a lot of history here around the IPO and developer trust and developers doing the right thing and the wrong thing. I experienced this from the outside. So about 6 months ago, I actually met with Jack Dorsey and all of his staff and gave them the exact feedback that you're giving me today. And basically, karma came back to bite me in the butt. And now my job is to fix all
that's
that.
Your problem.
Now it's my problem. And I think that is actually a good task to have. And what I can recognize is tell you, hey, listen, you are right. And we are working on it, which is the best thing you could say as a product person, because right. We're not working on something completely different. or I'm not saying you're wrong, or I'm not saying this is not a priority. I'm saying you hit the nail on the head, and that's where we're delivering in the next, in this year.
One follow-up question. Very important question. Who has a better beard, me or Jack Dorsey?
Definitely him.
Definitely,
you're fired, dude. Yeah. You're fired. Go
you can
home.
Get an arm tattoo, though. Hello.
Sorry, one more thing. I know I keep saying one more thing, but one more thing that's very important to me, and then I'll let the other guys talk. Lists, okay? Please, for the love of God, give me your word that you will not get rid of lists on Twitter, because I know that not many people use it, but I depend on it 100%. I live with lists. Please don't get rid of lists.
I'm please get not rid of them, been responsible for that product. I remember I think you gave me a lot of feedback on Reader when Google shut down Reader. Again, I was not the product manager on that.
Make sure to speak about to Google Reader for me.
Yeah, okay. Well, so welcome to Bootstrap, where Hillel just airs his grievances. But I bet you'll see a lot of this, by the way, in your, because you're relatively new at Twitter, right? It's been just a few months. Few months even?
My role, 2 weeks now.
In your role,
2 weeks. 3 weeks and 3 months in the company.
Yeah. So, I mean, in one sense, you're probably like thinking, all right, that's a lot of heat to come my way. But on the other hand, it's better to have people care than not care at all. Right.
That's one of the key aspects of this role is that my DM is full, or like my private messages are full of people who have strong opinions and strong feelings, which is a great thing to have, because I don't know how to generate feelings when there's apathy, but I know how to address pains. That's my role. That's what I've been doing for a long time. And people are very vocal.
Yeah, it's a thin line between love and hate, right?
It is, because people care. So if you give them what they need and you are empathetic to their needs, you can turn a lot of frustration into love.
Yeah. I mean, you could see it now from the outside. I know you just got there. But I think that, you know, people in the techosphere were making a big deal about the fact that Twitter is retiring fleets. And they were commended for that, because it was something that, you know, they felt wasn't working the way they intended to. So Hillel, might be that lists will go away. Maybe there's a new culture shift at Twitter.
Not do that.
I literally don't know, because I'm 2 weeks into the role. I'm like with you. I don't want it to go away. And I don't think, I haven't seen anything like that, but I definitely am not responsible for that.
Do what you got to do, Amir.
Sounds like a bad excuse, Amir. Just sounds like a bad excuse to me.
All right, Guy, what do you got?
Yeah, so I want to talk to you a bit about your transition to Twitter. So you were working on a startup. I'll say from outside, it seemed like you were just getting started, more or less. I don't know, you were around for maybe a year or so. I don't know. And it seemed like, for us, from the outside, it was a kind of a surprise to see that you guys sold so early. And, you know, it was an acqui-hire, I understand, right? So the product isn't living on, from what I understand externally.
It was IP plus people.
Okay. But the product you were working on is not... correct me if I'm wrong, is not being developed inside Twitter anymore, or maybe it is.
So we're using the IP. We're not. We haven't sold the business. We shut down the business, and we've done IP plus people.
Okay. So you want to? I'd like to hear about the entrepreneurial side in you, of how it was working on a baby and putting in all your energy into something that, you know, I assume you had very big plans for. And then those plans changed rather quickly.
I think it was a matter of, so first of all, I was a founder in Reshuffle, but I was a late founder. So I joined it wasn't a standard, hey, I'm going to create a startup and I open up a startup. I joined a startup. It was called Binaris. And I joined after 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they already have had a technology, and I joined in order to help bring more product savvy into it and to get it in front of more developers and monetize it. So that was my mission. And I joined as chief product. And we built a great team, and we built a product that our developers loved, and we got into a nice annual return. And then when we started raising our A round, We looked at one of our partners, which said, "Hey, listen, like if you're into A round, you should probably talk to us also about acquisitions." And we started talking to them, and 3 months later, with no sleep involved, we were part of the company, which was crazy. I think that what made it for me personally was the mission. I think that impacting, getting developers onto the public conversation and getting them all the tools and services they need, the opportunity there was crazy. I think the team fit. We actually, like, I talked to my team while they were talking to their counterparts at Twitter, and they just said, everybody here is nice. And they are passionate about their mission. And I don't know how rare, if you worked in corporates, how rare it is to have like everybody's passionate and nice and wanting to work on the same mission. It's like a lottery ticket. So on the one hand, we had a crazy big company that had joint mission with us, full of nice people that was willing to give us an amazing mission to work on. And that's what we decided to do.
Yeah, talk about hitting the like a goldmine of a developer ecosystem, especially one that they've signaled that they want to reinvest in, let's say.
Yes.
So it sounds like it aligns well. While we're on this topic though of your transition in, you mentioned recently about in your post about your new role that you lost your executive sponsor before you joined.
Yeah.
And so as someone who went through something similar, mine left 4 days after I got to my current company. And we have the same haircut. So how stressful was that?
It was, I would say it was like a shy of a heart attack.
Right.
It was definitely a panic attack on the table. He called me, and this is all open. Nothing here is a secret. He actually stated that on Twitter that he's leaving. And if you go and you can like trace all the things that are that I'm saying, they're all in the Twitter sphere. He told me, "Hey, I'm leaving," and I'm like, "No! Oh my god!" The only question I asked him during the interview was like, "Are you staying? Because I really want to work with you." And it's like, and now he's leaving. And if you know how these type of things work, it's a death sentence usually to the deal. If the executive sponsor leaves, you should say goodbye to the deal and count your blessing that it actually had a chance. And luckily for us, his manager called me 2 hours later when I was still like holding the bag, trying to breathe. And said, "Hey, listen, I read the brief. It makes a lot of sense. I'm very bullish about this deal. Let's do it."
Wow.
And I'm like, "Okay." And he said, like, "Don't worry about it. I'll find a manager to like a head of product to manage this, land the team." And I'm like, "Okay, that's what I'm going to do." And it was frustrating because my team landed and my co-founder landed, and I didn't land. My job was a corporate listener for 6 weeks. And if you know me, and I'm sure Hillel, I need to do something. I need to have an impact. And just listening to people, like after a week, I told them, "Hey, listen, my marginal return is very low. I want to be impactful." And he's like, "No, continue." And in backhand, it's very, very smart because I've developed a lot of empathy and a lot of deeper understanding into like, what do people think? What are the things that you see from the outside are not necessarily the things that you see from the inside. So I learned a lot about Twitter and Twitter platform. And it also helped me develop together with the team, a vision that I think is going to be very powerful.
How is it re-interviewing?
The first step is what Hillel asked. It was awkward. But
right?
Again, people are awesome at Twitter. So I had to interview with all the staff team and with all the top level execs in Twitter, together with my peers that became people that report to me. But they were so awesome and so open-hearted that I'm very thankful to for the process. But it was interviewing twice for the same company month after month. That is a story.
You know, I have to say, I really, it's not an exaggeration to say that I owe my career to Twitter, which means I owe my career to Itamar. Like, the craziest things have happened to me on Twitter. Like, Ellen DeGeneres follows me on Twitter. Like, on what planet is that normal? Like, it's the people I was able to connect with on Twitter, Mark Andreessen, Alyssa Milano. It's crazy. When I talk to startups, I say, like, if you have to choose one platform, for sure Twitter, like, not even a question. Now for my question to you. As someone who worked at every single tech company, basically, except for Apple, get on that, first of all. And let's put aside Twitter for 1 second, because you're there and you can't really, you know, tell the truth completely. So let's put that aside. Out of all the companies you've worked for, which was the funnest, which had the best culture? Besides Twitter.
Oh, that. So, and I really like Twitter culture, just to make clear. They have amazing things like no emails on weekends, no emails after work. Yeah, it's like...
just tweets.
Like, I can definitely tell you that, like, I haven't found a single jerk there yet, which is really, really rare and really awesome. I think one of the best cultures was Slack in the early days, because basically our faces were like this from the velocity of the company. And I think humans, when they are in need and they collaborate to a good goal, magic happens. And if you feel like it's a little bit like the army service, you're in duress, but you have a joint mission. And that was very empowering to me. So my mates from Slack, I feel like very similar to my mates in the army. Like, they are the people that I fought with, and I had hardship with them, and we solved things and we saw success. So from that perspective, Slack in the early days, when we were still playing football in an empty office because half of the office was not manned or woman. And that was an amazing experience.
How big was it when you joined?
That's an easy question.
It was shy of 100 people. So about 90 people.
That's when early. I joined.
It's crazy.
And And we were doubling our growth every 2 weeks. And I actually had like a miluim or jury duty where I trained people. And that was my contribution to another contribution I had to. Zach was to train people about the culture and about the platform.
It's funny. The inverse to Hillel's question was, as I was going to ask it, was which culture was the most cutthroat and why was it Amazon?
Amazon has a different view on culture, which is be customer obsessed. So the most important thing, and you need to respect that because it delivers results. The most important thing in Amazon by far is the customer. And they're willing to do everything for the customer. It has a price. It has a price on retention. It has a price on many things. But the sharpness and the focus on customer obsession is definitely something that I learned from a lot.
And you had to write a lot, right? Like those 6-page narratives, it's true. Like,
you have to write a lot. There's no presentations. Presentations are outlawed. Wow. Everything needs to be written. I actually, like, during a session with Jeff Bezos, him reading 6 pages that I wrote was one of the crazy moments in my career.
Wow.
What? Tell us about it. What was his reaction?
So you go into a room, and it's like, you know, the doctors that have 2 rooms. And so, like, he's
a waiting room.
He's an expensive guy, and there's like a waiting room. So you go into one room and there's 2 waiting rooms. So he just finished one six pager, is now coming to read our 6-pager. Uh-huh. And he goes in and just like says, "Hey, nice to thank you. What are we going to talk about?" So it's like stateless, right? He comes in with an empty mind. What are we going to talk about? And my boss says, "Okay, we're going to talk about the developer platform that Twitch is building. And here's the 6 pages. And now 20 minutes with no word, nothing. And he writes his notes on the 6-pager. And I've written at that point, I've written that 6 pages at least 20 times. So I know when he's writing something on a paragraph, I know which paragraph it is. What is it saying? So I'm like freaking out. And then he continues on to give actual value for something that I've spent a lot of time, and me and my team have spent a lot of time writing and optimizing, and it still is able to provide tons of additional value and feedback that is really rare. And I had a conversation with my manager at the time, and I said, like, how can he do that? How can he spend 20 minutes reading a six pager and then actually thinking about things that we haven't thought about? And my manager said, like, he's been doing this for 15 years. If you do something for so long, you develop this this sense of being able to find the holes, to find opportunities, to be able to deliver value. And I came out of that with like more value than I provided, I think. So that was an amazing experience.
I wanna just take this conversation a little bit of a sharp turn here, if I may. You write a lot. You've become a prolific writer. I know that because I edit your writing sometimes when you ask me to.
Yes, thank you.
I want to add to my LinkedIn editor of Amir Shabbat. But more importantly, the reason I feel comfortable asking this question is because you've spoken about it publicly. But if you don't want to talk about it, let me know. But you had a learning disability as a kid. You were told you weren't going to be able to
write. I have a learning disability.
Tell me about that.
The most scary, you know what's the most scary thing in my life other than like my kids' health and stuff like that. The most mundane, scary thing in my life is to go through the U.S. custom, and because I have to fill the form written by hand, and my handwriting is not readable at all. So it is a disability. My wife keeps giving me like forms that are already pre-filled, so I don't need to write as much. I read very slowly and I write even slower. My handwriting is, I'm not intelligent. Like, I can't read my own handwriting. And I'm very, very thankful. Exactly. and I'm very thankful for all the AI and improvements in editing, because they help me a lot. If you would see my writing experience, It's pretty awful. And I used friends like you to help me, even after all the AI and auto editing, to find horrible mistakes in my writing.
I didn't find anything so horrible. That's the truth. But talk to me about the books, because you've written more than one. So like, talk to me about that.
So my wife is amazing, and she knows a lot about APIs and about conversational interfaces, because she had to read my books about 2-3 times and turn it from garbage English that I had into something, because dyslexia is not something that goes away. Just like autism, you can't cure, you can work around. So I know how to use common words, and I know certain rules, but I make so many like fundamental mistakes that it seems like I'm not intelligent, just like my teachers thought, and maybe they were right, but
clearly not.
Writing the book was me dumping this mass of words, and then my wife doing two rounds on it, and then an editor doing two rounds on it, and then a lot of feedback from a lot of good friends, and at the end something good came out of that. But it's definitely a process of iteration and improvements.
Written two books,
yes. And I have a fiction coming up.
Oh yeah.
Why? Wow. Where did that come from?
Because why? I feel like I need to write a fiction, and I have a story in my mind and it needs to be downloaded. My download speed is very, very slow. So I'm writing a chapter every few months, but it's coming up. My books to date are about conversational interface. How do you create anything from Alexa to Slack bot and Twitter bots. And the other one is on building APIs that developer love, which is basically the TLDR of my career.
By the way, were those books something that, like, did they come about as a result? Because they're additive to your career, right? Just the space you were in, the things you were doing. Or if you would you have done it regardless? Were they something you just wanted to write a book? You like staking your claim, like, I'm actually an authority on this. I know it. No? So
entire career seems a lot more direct than it actually is. I met with O'Reilly a few times. Tim O'Reilly is a great guy. And I was into bots and AI, and that was all the rave at the time. And one of his team said, hey, would you mind writing a book? And I'm like, I'm an engineer. I can do anything. And they said, oh, you could do it in 3 months. And I said, yeah, 3 months sounds like a decent time to write a book. And what I learned is that I cannot write a book in 3 months and still be a good husband and a good father. So when we were on vacation, my kids were on the beach. Yeah, exactly. when my kids were on the beach, I had to still write my book because I was dyslexic and took me a lot more than 3 months to actually write it. What I didn't know is that they didn't mean 3 months. It was like more aspirational 3 months. Coming again to being an engineer, I thought a deadline is a deadline. And they thought a deadline is a guidance.
Right.
So when I gave the book after 4 months and apologized, they said, oh, you did it really fast. That was amazing.
So you thought, despite your disability, you could do it in 3 months? You honestly thought that you could do it?
Give me an engineer that can't do any project in 3 months. I think that from my perspective, 3 months is a lot and I can do a lot. And in that time, I learned that I was not calibrated well.
I'm asking specifically about the disability that you know you have, and yet you managed to overcome, you know, like if I had a problem speaking, I wouldn't start a podcast, right? Because I'd be like, okay, this is not my, I'm not good at speaking. I can't, you know, and you say specifically.
You're a much smarter person than I am. I look at the problem that I think I'm not able to, and it's just a prompt to actually try to do it.
Wow. That's remarkable.
I want to be
mindful. Stupid. I think that Darwinistically speaking, that's probably a very bad trait.
I want to be mindful of your time, so I want to get to this point. You're Israeli born and raised, correct?
Yes.
And you moved, so you're working for Google here, but then while you were at Google, you moved to California.
Yeah.
And you seem to be enjoying yourself a lot. And I think recently you became American.
I became American and I moved to Texas.
Moved to Austin, yeah.
I was going to get to that. So clearly you're enjoying yourself. How is it? Are you ever coming back? Do you just love it there?
I love it there and I love it here. I'm part of the torn people. and there's great Israelis there and there's great Americans there and there are great Israelis here and there are great Americans here. And it's hard. And you're always torn. And as you grow and your kids grow, they have their own aspirations and you have a life there. So there is no easy answer for that. I haven't figured that out. I'm going to probably always be torn, and hopefully I'm going to spend more time here now that Corona is over and be able to meet amazing startups and founders here. My aspiration is to be at a certain point on an airplane between those amazing countries and to have impact on both.
Does Twitter have an office here?
No.
Dublin.
Okay. There you go. Get started.
There's a Twitter office in Austin, or are you doing remote?
No, I'm remote. The company is very friendly with remotes.
Wow, that's awesome. Amir, another personal question. You've gone through a long process. Clearly, if anyone saw my interviews with you 5 years ago and they see this, you've lost a lot of weight. I imagine fitness is a thing that I know. Walk me through that process. When did you get all into fitness? Why? And how much weight did you lose?
Oh, okay. So, in pounds, it's much nicer to lose pounds, by the way, because there are a lot more pounds.
And so run
lost
kilometers.
30 pounds two times. Yes, run kilometers, exactly. So I lost 15 kilos, 30 pounds, and then I lost another 15 kilos, 30 pounds.
Wow.
So I was 104 kilos, and now I'm 74 kilos.
Teach me.
During the corona, I had a breakdown, like a lot of us, right? It was depressing. You couldn't meet people. It was a hard time, at least for me, when I like to meet people. I like to hug people. I was tweeting, I miss hugging people because it was actually something that I'd still do. And I was doing my meetings from bed. really depressed and going to eat lunch and then going back to bed to do more meetings from there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it resonates with you. That sucked. And one day my wife, who was amazing, said, you don't look happy. let's go on a bike ride. And we went on this bike ride, and I was grumpy all the time because I was not happy with life in Corona time. And then I saw, we went through the Bay Area, and my world changed. I saw birds and I saw nature, and it was amazing. It was hard. I was like schwitzing. I was like sweating like crazy. It was 16 kilometers, 10 miles. And I was like, I was out of breath. But at the end of that, I told her, hey, I can do this every day. It was such a crazy, and me being me, it was hard and painful and sweaty. So I did it every day. And that changed the trajectory. It was either, in Hebrew, it goes really well. It was either go into insanity or go into shape. Likanes lechosher or likanes lishtageh. And I just decided to get into shape, and then using good friends like Nir Ayal and other friends, I changed the way I think about food and moved from being mindless with my food to being mindful with my food.
I'm actually very mindful knowing when I eat a steak, by the way, very mindful when I eat that steak. Just saying.
So it's a matter of like, you can eat the steak. Now I have no restriction on what I eat. But I just eat, instead of eating the entire steak, I eat a portion of that steak that it fits what I've done today in terms of energy. And if sometimes I overeat, like everyone. I don't think it's a battle that I won. I think it's a battle that I'm keeping my line. And I will never, ever end that battle. I love food. I love good food. I love crazy rich food. And I always will need to have this balance.
If we meet next week, like we said, no dieting in our meeting, please. All right, we're eating steak
no
together.
Dieting in our meeting.
By the way, Amir, on my end, one last question. I don't know if anybody else has any questions, but I have one. The most important question, I think, you know, out of all the questions we've asked you, is when do I get Twitter swag?
I was waiting for that.
I've seen you with Twitter swag, so I don't know if you need more Twitter
swag.
Very
outdated.
There you go. Amir pushing back. Thank you.
Just say no, Amir.
You know my address.
It's still a bird, no Hillel. You got it.
Listen.
I'm going to bring you Twitter swag next time I'm in town.
You have my address because you've sent me so much swag over the years from Google. Yeah. So I'm just saying.
Yeah. No worries. No worries.
All right, I got last one. I know you got to go. You recently talked about how you became a venture partner at Innovation Endeavors. I met up with you when you were still at Reshuffle. You seem so happy at entrepreneurship. You're like, startup life, yes. It's so awesome, right? Now that you're a venture partner, which is usually the case with someone who has like a very experienced career as yours, do you see a future in switching sides to be an investor, or are you operator for life and you're dabbling because you're helping and you're, you know, very plugged in?
No, I love it. I love investing. I think it's people call it the dark side, but I love it. Even if it's the dark side, I don't think it's the dark side. I think if you do it right, and if you partner with founders in a good way, you can be so much more instrumental than just the money. I think you can give them connections. I've seen people help with recruitment, which is one of the biggest pains I've seen. People help with connections. I think that's the, if you do your investment right, you're the true mensch. And I've seen like VCs that really drive value and enable entrepreneurs. You have to understand the limitations. It is not your startup. It is the founder's startup, and you're there to help them. So it is a challenging effort if you're an operator by nature. But I think that that's a natural next step for me. And I think that I'm enjoying this too much to say it's going to be just a part-time in the future.
Interesting. You know, we had Easy Vidra, our friend Easy.
Easy!
On the pod. And I brought up a point.
He's much nicer than I am.
But I think I brought up the point that, you know, any startup founder who's listening to this, because that is mainly our audience, seek out investors like Amir. Well, seek out Amir. But also seek out, if someone has been on the other side, they bring a level of empathy that other investors don't, which is not to say that they won't be good investors, But there is an added bonus to like having an investor who was in your shoes before.
Yes, I would even say more than that. I would say pick your investors, because a lot of the people from an entrepreneurship perspective, they want to be picked. They want the VC to choose them. They want the VC to give them a term sheet. They don't see this as a bi-directional relationship. So my call to all the founders, like, be picky with your investors. Make sure that you have the right people on your cap table. Life is too short to work with jerks, and life is, and like, the risk of having the wrong investor, somebody who will not support you when things are hard, is high. So you have to have the right people supporting you and the right people funding you. And you need to make sure that you choose the right person. So it's a bi-directional choice. It's not just like the VC chose to invest in you. You chose to take their money. And that's the call, my call to entrepreneurs. Be mindful with everything you do, with the product that you choose, with the problems that you pick, with the customers that you decide to help, and with your investors.
So we should be sending you deals? You're actively looking?
I'm actively looking. I've met with so many interesting startups this week. The last 2 weeks, it's been a crazy experience.
Think about in the developer relations position, what kind of deal flow you can get.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My job has become from like the least sexy in tech to crazy sexy in the last few years, with DevOps blowing up and all of that.
Damn right. All right. I know we went 3 minutes over what you had. We want to be respectful of your time.
The sexiest, this is awesome.
The sexiest Amir Shvaz.
No, by far, no. Oh my God, cringe moment.
That's the quote.
That's how we're going to end.
My role, not me. No.
There's no one sexier than you. Anyway, Amir, really, thank you so much. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you
for for my Google Glass. I really appreciate it. It's still a piece of history.
Thank you for being an amazing innovator that is much smarter than me to be. And I'm thankful for you for being in my ability to impact. So thank you.
No, thanks for being on Bootstrap. We really appreciate it.
What do you say about the name Bootstrap, by the way? As Twitter.
I love it.
Yes?
I love it.
Twitter has a product called Bootstrap, for those who don't know.
It's an open source project that I think they've already liked that. It's now called Bootstrap, not Twitter Bootstrap.
Oh, it's not Twitter Bootstrap anymore? Okay. So
I think it used to be like, I'm dating myself, but the first version is, I think, were called Twitter Bootstrap. I think now it's only Bootstrap.
Yeah, so we still use it. It's awesome.
But I love the name.
All right. Thanks, Amir.
Amir, thanks so much, man.
Oh, wow. My God. That was a good interview.
I think Bennett has some competition, huh?
Yeah. This might be... We should actually make it a competition. Like, when we get well-known people like Amir and see who can best Bennett, and then we'll, Hello, you got to tweet to both of them and get us in a nice Twitter war.
Sound like a Twitter war. Yeah. I got to say, like, I've interviewed Amir on so many different platforms over the years, and he's just, you can't not have a good interview with the guy. He's the nicest guy on the planet. He lives to help other people. He's worked at every tech company. Like, he's just a great interviewee, you know?
Yeah. I think I'm happy that someone's so helpful and like empathetic was able to find a career in like doing that, which is so awesome for him.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I agree.
That was long. Thank you, Amir, for being on. We really appreciate it. We'll check back in like a year. We'll see how things are going.
When he's working at Apple.
When he's working at Apple or Facebook.
Or Facebook.
Twitter poll.
Where should Amir work?
Bootstrap listeners. Where is Amir going to work next? I know he just started at Twitter, but you know, is it going to be Apple or Facebook? Good idea, Hello. All right, we'll tweet that out. Like everyone, let us know.
Although we might get him in trouble, but whatever.
Wisdom of the crowd.
All right.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you say that because like normally you'd be like, yeah, his boss won't know, but he works for Twitter.
All right, listen.
So they might.
I mean, now at this point, I'm getting the feeling that you guys want my wife to be mad at me. Like, my wife.
All right.
I got to go.
That would be fun. Later, Hello. That would be fun.
Later. Bye-bye.
Later, boys.
All right, bye.
Guy, I know the music's playing now, but we forgot. Bye.
We didn't forget.
Bye.
Oh, bye.
Bye. Yeah, because I cut it off. Anyway, brought to you by rnintech.com.
Oh,
sponsored
thank
you. By rnintech. Well, it is, because you're sound editing and you're putting in the time. All right, bye.
Bye.